Action Park Media.
November 22nd, 1997, the 90th edition of the Apple Cup saw Mike Price's 11th-ranked Washington State Cougars needing a road win over arch-rival Washington to go to their first Rose Bowl in 67 years. Heisman finalist Ryan Leaf threw for 358 yards and connected with receiver Chris Jackson for two touchdowns as the Cougars jumped out to an early lead and held on to earn a share of the Pac-10 title and a berth in the Rose Bowl.
You're now listening to Bust, the Ryan Leaf story.
You guys heard the story. You heard what my recruitment was like, my time at Washington State, and then ultimately what transpired after. I wanted to bring on a guy that was instrumental in helping me get to where I needed to get to. I was a father figure, not only him, but his family as well. Head football coach for the Washington State Cougars at the time. Here joins us here on the Bus Podcast, Mike Price. Hey, coach, how we doing?
I'm doing good. I'm in Green River, Utah, at a Love's gas station. We're just driving from UTEP. Aaron plays Rice tonight. We've been down there at UTEP with them for the last couple of weeks. So we're just driving, and then we'll stop at a hotel and watch the game tonight. But we're just driving back to Coeur d'Alene.
Coeur d'Alene, very special place
Joyce
to both
and
of us.
The dog.
Joyce and your dog.
Joyce and Joyce's dog.
Joyce, of course, is Coach Price's wife. Joyce used to bring me pumpkin pie every week during the season while we were watching film. We'll get into that a little bit more here. But Coach, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what the recruiting process was for me. Leading up to my commitment to Washington State.
Well, we went out and recruited all over the country for the very best quarterbacks that we could find. You know, really off the Drew Bledsoe had a big influence on that, us getting in the doors of athletes like you. And so we wanted, obviously, anybody in Pacific Northwest would evaluate. You know, and we evaluated all over the United States, and we were recruiting Peyton Manning at the same time that you were being recruited. We didn't live in and Greasy. We were recruiting Greasy down in Florida when you were in high school. So, but anyway, we wanted getting a Northwest kid was really great for us, and you were a big factor in that and a big get for us. You just visited Miami, where my oldest son, Eric Price, was coaching, and he was hosting you in Miami, I think, a little bit when you went in your recruiting visit, either getting you in trouble or getting you out of trouble. I'm not sure. But
I can tell you the story there. I can tell you the story there. He was the GA.
We probably don't have to go there, do we?
He was the GA at the time, and I went out pretty much drinking for the first time in my life without my recruiting trip to Miami. And the next day when I was supposed to go through all of my, academic meetings, I was so hungover that Eric said, just come sleep. And I slept in his office on his couch. That was essentially my recruiting trip to the University of Miami.
We were thrilled to death. We finally decided to come your dad kind of scared me a little bit because he was so quiet, you know, and he's not a real quiet guy. He's just a normal guy, but he was really intense, figuring what I was saying when I wasn't. But anyway, we didn't have a great year that year on the football field, but I went to the Rose Bowl with our family for the first time to see the Rose Bowl game. And so I stood in line at halftime and got on the phone. This was before cell phones, and called Ryan and said, "Hey, this is Mike Price. I'm at the Rose Bowl. I wish you were with us. And you and me, if you sign, we will be. We'll be back here someday, Ryan, if you sign with Washington State." And the wait in line to get on that phone was a long wait, but it was sure worth it. because I think that that showed Ryan that I was really thinking about him, you know, and he was our number one recruit.
Yeah, Coach, that was, you know, that was January 1st, 1994, right? UCLA in Wisconsin. Coach Terry Donahue was, right, was currently recruiting me as well at UCLA. And you did something that, you know, I feel that a lot of coaches could have done, you know, simply say something as simple as that. Hey, we believe in you enough. You come here, you and I will play in that game together. And I remember getting off the phone with you that day, walking into mom and dad's bedroom and telling them both, like, I think I'm going to go to Washington State. And they were, I think they were both, pleasantly surprised. Even though you felt like my dad was a bit standoffish during that process, he was just kind of taking everything in. It was really his,
right,
his only trip he went on with me, and you know, he wanted what was best for his son, and
right,
and I clearly made the best decision, because once I got on campus, now I want you to talk to the listeners a little bit about what it's like to go out and get a recruiting class. And then when you're done recruiting, you know, you're going to have to coach and get a team ready to go. And, well, most of the time, especially back then, you redshirted many of your freshman players to get them, you know, more mentally and physically mature and ready to play. So you go through the whole process, you woo these players, they feel like they're so important, and then they walk on campus, and there's this tough reality of like, hey, we love you, but we got to get ready to go play some games and win football games so we can keep our job, so we can coach you when you're ready to go.
We called it the process of de-recruitment. You know, we've been telling these guys how much we love them and how good they are. And they come to campus and we run them till they can't take a step anymore. And we're hard on them. All of a sudden, we're swearing at them or something during a practice, and they're third string when they're normally used to not only being first string, but the star of the team. And we were, you know, when you come in as a freshman, you really don't know how to read coverages and all kinds of stuff, like at the quarterback position. But each freshman's got to learn his own position. But so we kind of put them on the back burner and put them on the scout team where they will copy the team that we're going to plays and practice it, but probably we'll never get a chance to play as a freshman if you have a good team. And we had a pretty good team, and we had Ryan as our scout team quarterback, and he was playing against some of the best defensive players in the nation, actually, because next year we led the nation in defense, the Palouse Posse. Mark Fields was a number one draft pick in the NFL draft, highest middle linebacker in the NFL. And we had some great big guys on the defensive line. And we put Ryan over there to copy players of our opponents. And he'd get after him. He didn't go over there and shy away at all. I remember at the end of the season, we were finishing practice when I heard a bunch of cheering going on down there, and they had Ryan on their shoulders and they were cheering his name. This is the defensive team now. Before we play the Huskies in the Apple Cup on the last practice, they're carrying him off the field and cheering for him because they felt like he did such a great job all year long and teased them and competed with them, competed against them, and showed, you know, our defense the best picture of the opponent they could possibly do. Zimmer came down, he was our defensive coordinator, said, "Hey, Mike, I think you got a great one in this Leaf guy. He's a great leader. All these guys love him." And turned out he was right.
Coach, you have an assistant coach come down and tell you that type of thing. We went into the off season after my redshirt freshman year, and what didn't I do to earn the job? Because as a player, as myself, I just thought when I saw the quarterback that was ahead of me at the time was a guy by the name of Chad Davis. And he, you know, he was undersized. We weren't very explosive on offense. We had a great defense. What ultimately that off season did I not do enough to be the leader that you needed to name me the starter going into my redshirt freshman season?
Well, I think we were kind of a team that was divided. You know, offense and defense were divided and it wasn't a full team. Defense was so much better than our offense. So many more aggressive players. And we practiced against each other a lot that our offense had a tough time keeping up with us. At the same time, we recruited a transfer quarterback that was an All-American passing quarterback from Southern California. He had taken us, he was our quarterback when we went to the
Alamo
bowl game in San Antonio. Played pretty well, but he was, I don't know, he just wasn't a good fit for us, I think, at that time. As next year, and we weren't playing so well, we gave Ryan the opportunity to play and get more experience. I think he did a lot of work in the off season with the players in the summer, in the spring. I know we met with Coach Levenseller on his side. We studied defenses and how to read. Mike Levenseller was our receiving coach, and he and Ryan got together and looked at tape. What was a three deep? What was a two deep? What was a one deep? What are they doing here? You know, a three on two? What kind of a zone blitz is? And really spent that time, quality time with Ryan, what the defenses were. And I think he wanted to, he were really ready to learn and you wanted to learn. And then we just worked on your mechanics on the field, you know. Athletically, Ryan was so much better than any of the other quarterbacks. He was a tremendous all-around athlete, still is, but he just didn't know the system or college football. And when he got a hold of it, he was just kind of like, gosh, he couldn't get enough of it. He couldn't get enough of it. He'd meet Wednesday nights and Thursday nights with me in the office, going over the game plan and help me create a game plan. I listened to him and he listened to me. Sometimes we argued. Sometimes we shouted at each other. But we're both, you know, we both had each other's back and we're both striving to get the Cougars where they had never been since 1937, and that was to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, Coach, those nights, what do you remember most from those nights, those Wednesday nights, those Thursday nights where I would come in and we'd watch the game film and then we'd prepare and we put the game plan together? Was that something that you did with Drew? Was that something that you've done in the past with quarterbacks, or was that something unique and new to you that you and I got to figure out together and develop together?
Not really. I hadn't done it very much with other kids. Not at that time, you know. That Wednesday night, we would come in together and watch the Drew Carey show.
Yeah,
because that was our favorite show. And then as soon as that was over, we would talk football and talk over what we'd done in the week. Now, this is with a young guy is named 21 years old. You know, he's a sophomore and going into a sophomore year. We were co-workers, and we were actually becoming quite good friends through all of these night meetings. But we'd go over the game plan. What play do you like? What play don't you like? Why don't you like that play? What play you think is the best of these three plays against the defense that we're seeing right now? We'd say these are the 10 first plays I want you to run. Start thinking about keeping a positive image in your mind about them. And then we'd finish the evening off with pumpkin pie, whipped cream, and a glass of milk. Now, don't laugh out there, people. This is the truth. My wife would come in and bring in a pumpkin pie, big slice of pumpkin pie with whipped cream on it, bring it up to our office. And that's how we'd finish the night. It was a great atmosphere. I don't know if it could ever be repeated again, but we sure came together because of it.
Yeah, you know, it was special. I felt really a part of something. I felt like you trusted me. There was a loyalty to that I don't think I ever truly ever experienced again, maybe until I had Coach Dungy in Tampa Bay a few years later. But was there a moment that came, that happened early on in my career where I was playing, where you just, you knew, like, this is the guy who's going to help us get to where we need to get? Because you just never quite know until you see him go out and actually do it in a real game against a real opponent. What was that moment for you where you said, okay, we got our guy, and now it's just a matter of building around him and making us have the best possible team?
Well, I knew after your first year playing, you know, with the games that we lost, the ball was in your hand for like four of those games that we lost on the last play of the game. You had the ball, had a chance to win the game, and we didn't do it, but we came close. Next year, when he has that opportunity, he's going to make good of it. And when it did come down to the last play, then the next year you always were there to make the big play. It was never, I don't know, there were so many things you did that I felt like were a coming of age for you. I can remember at home when we were playing in our stadium in Pullman, we had the defense figured out pretty good what they were in. And so the coach from the press box said, "Mike, they're blitzing. Yell out to Ryan that they're blitzing." So I'm yelling, "He's got the ball. The game's going on. He's underneath the center." And I'm yelling at him, "Ryan, watch the blitz. And I kept saying it over again. And then he stopped and stood up, looked. They said, I know. God, leave me alone." That was one time. Another time he was supposed to throw a quick out on one side, and it would have been a sure 8-yard gain. But on the other side, they were double covered. So instead of throwing the 8-yard quick pass to the left, he threw into the double coverage, and he started to turn it. I'm going like, "Oh no, it's double coverage." Threw it about 25, 30 yards on a rope right between the two defensive backs. Boom, we gained 35 yards. And then he runs by. This is during the game, 60,000 people in the stadium. He runs by the sidelines and runs by me and says, "Didn't think I'd get it in there, did you?" He just did stuff like that. But it's just like, oh, man, I want to kill him. But you want to love him at the same time.
We're talking with head football coach for Washington State University during my tenure there, Mike Price. Coach, the Rose Bowl was always this thing. It was this carrot that hung out there for everybody. You've had ties to Washington State your whole life, right? From when you went to college to be a GA, and that was always the goal. That was always the thing everybody wanted. When that final year started and where we won those first two games against UCLA and USC, you and your coaching staff, what were those meetings like separate from the team in how we were playing, where we were going? Was there ever any talk in those meetings, kind of getting ahead of yourselves a little bit, like, you know, this is a real possibility for us? Or was it something you guys really kept close to the vest until we really knew that they came down to that final game?
The season has its ups and downs, you know what I mean? There were the things went good, they went down, they went, every season is like that. So it was kind of hard to say what one time it was, but I think there was a steady, firm belief that we felt capable to win all of our games and go to the Rose Bowl and win that game also. And I think it probably was built by two other coaches also on defense, Mike Zimmer, who had left our program, but had been there as a defensive coordinator, and Bill Doba. And they were so, our defense was so good and played so hard. It was really difficult to score points. So we started it from that. And our special teams were really good. We always had a good kicker. We always had a good punter. Always had coverage people, returners. And then the offense came together over a tragedy. One of the players lost his wife. I don't want to go into it, but it was a car accident. It was horrible. And so we all came together with him and helped him through that. Our sports psychologist helped a ton with that. And so then I think Ryan took the receivers, or I know he took the receivers out in the spring after practice, in the summer when we didn't have practices, and worked with them, throwing him the ball, teaching him the things that Levenseler taught him about coverages and really working hard. So they became a special unit. They call themselves the Fab Five.
Yes, sir.
The receivers, and they had a lot of pride in that. So Antolus Posse, as a defense, Palouse was a kind of dirt they have in Pullman. But anyway, they called themselves the Palouse Posse, and we're all Cougars. But we had the Fab Five, Palouse Posse, and then those offensive linemen, they had the Fat Five. And so we kind of had three different groups, and Ryan kind of all tied it together toward the end of the year. The season was cut. I know we started out with those two big wins, but the season kind of built up and built our confidence more and more and more. And Ryan was there to help it. And he put together a video. At that time, it wasn't a lot of highlight tapes. We had a real good video guy. So Ryan went in there and put together a couple of tapes that were just outstanding for the Apple Cup. And we're walking off the practice field on Friday. He put his arm around me, says, "Coach, you're not worried, are you?" I said, "Well, I'm a little bit concerned. You know, it's a big game for us." He said, "We're going to beat these guys. I'm telling you, Coach, don't worry about it. Just, you know, we're going to beat them and everything's going to come through." I'm supposed to do that to the player. And the player instead is doing that to me.
Well, you had built a ton of confidence in me. I felt like I knew exactly what you were thinking, and you knew what I was thinking, and there was nothing that really could get in the way. The one loss we had that year at Arizona State, you had such a, there was a history that everybody brought up about how your record in November on the road was so poor. The game against Arizona State was the first November in that season, and we were on the road playing against the defending Pac-12 champ, the Arizona State Sun Devils. And we lost that football game, right? We got beat down the stretch.
Right.
We made some mistakes up front. We turned the football over. What was your mindset when we walked in that locker room? Because, I mean, you know me, I was emotional and stuff. I felt like I handled that pretty good, but I still didn't fully understand that our dream and our goal was still a reality until you came and talked to us in that post game where you said, "Hey, every single one of our goals is still there for us. We just have to go out and get it." And until I had heard that from you, and I think to the team, I felt like when we lost, like everything was over. What was your biggest takeaway after that loss, and what we ultimately did over the next three games to get there?
I remember that locker room a lot, like just like it was yesterday, Ryan, you know, and thank you for saying that. But I really felt like it was my fault in the play that I called, putting the pressure on the offensive line to pick up the blitz and not giving you enough time. So I was thinking I shouldn't have called that play. I should have called a play where we had seven man protection, because I was figuring they were going to blitz. So I was blaming myself and for it, and let you guys down. And so I went into it, the locker room, thinking that, after a good cry, I guess, I went out to the team and told them, "Hey, that we do have a lot to still work for, and everything is still there for us, and keep our heads up, and that the love that we have for each other, you know, it will never be broken, and we're going to still make this goal happen." That was a tough loss, and you had a shoulder or a
my elbow
that's yep. What it was, yeah. And Mark Smaha invented some kind of tape deal, a miracle tape to your elbow so it didn't hurt too bad, and you went out and warm up, so we're fine.
All right, coach, appreciate you taking time on your drive back north here. Let's get into, you know, the experiences that we got to live through together, right? We got to experience the Heisman Trophy. we got to experience the NFL draft as a family, right? You were part of my family through that process.
Right.
What were those experiences like? Because, I mean, you had just gone through the experience of Drew Bledsoe being the number one overall draft pick a few years before, but this was, you know, this was the first time a Washington State player was ever invited to the Heisman Trophy in New York. Just what was that like for you, your family, and being a part of what we were getting to enjoy together and represent Washington State University?
I think we just grew even closer as a family, and you and I even grew closer, and Joyce and John and your mom and everybody and your brothers, and just getting in aunts and uncles and cousins and nephews. And, you know, we just got to know each other a lot better because we hung out at those places. And when we would go, yeah, there would be always a few of your relatives that were just that stood by you all the time that would go with us. And so we really got to know each other real well. It added tremendously to all the things that we happened with our friendship, with the Leaf family, the Price Leaf friendship. I just bought a bottle of Turning Leaf Chardonnay last night in the Holy Liquor Store in Moab, and was just thinking about you. Didn't open it yet, so we'll open it tonight. Thinking about you, Ryan.
Well, I appreciate that. Before we get you out of here, you know, I dreamt of playing in the NFL, and you had made that dream a reality with the opportunities you presented, how you taught me to play the position, and I got the opportunity. I was, you know, drafted second overall to the San Diego Chargers. They were excited. The city was excited. I was excited. You witnessed me for those 4 years in college. And, you know, there were times where I didn't have success, but we were able to fight through it and get through it. And then there were times where we had great success. Where do you think I stopped my ability to, you know, take the good with the bad and then not be able to move forward in a positive direction? Was it the pressure, you think, for me, or how were you viewing it from, you know, 1,000 miles away back in Pullman while you're watching your quarterback struggle so much at the NFL level?
I don't know if there's anybody that had more things happen to him negatively out of his hands than you did. I mean, you had three offensive coordinators, you had three different quarterback coaches, two different head coaches, two different programs. You were injured and no one believed you. The communications had broken down with the Charger organization, not just you, but I mean, they're firing guys and hiring guys, changing things. The newspaper was, blowing things way out of proportion, that people didn't listen to you. They didn't believe what was going on. And I knew everything that was happening in behind the scenes, and it just wasn't fair. It was, I think it was a Kansas City game when you were sick and you flew out late and had a temperature and it poured down rain and you threw seven interceptions. You shouldn't even have played.
Well, I mean, you know, I wasn't going to not play, Coach. You know me. I had to, like, bones had to be coming out of my body. But I have to ask you this question, all right? So, after my poor rookie season, you know, every rookie has a poor season. That's just how it goes in the NFL. Peyton Manning went 3-13 that year, led the league in interceptions. In that off season, right, the San Diego Chargers had fired their head coach, Kevin Gilbride. June Jones had taken over and then ultimately left to take the Hawaii job as the collegiate football coach. Were you ever approached by the Chargers or through your agent to be possibly the next head coach for the Chargers? They went outside. They went to the Oregon State Beavers and got a guy by the name of Mike Riley, who had not had this type of success that you had in college. Plus, you knew the quarterback. You had the offense that I knew really well. Were you ever approached by the Chargers to be the head coach?
No, never. And but they would call me and ask me, what do I do to Ryan when he does this? Or what do I say, like, you know, go pay somebody to be with him and counsel him and help him through those situations. And I would respond and give them, I think, helpful suggestions that they never, that they, I don't know, they felt like I was just lying to them or something. And I was, when that time when you were supposed to be, oh, you had your, you went to Junior Seau's golf tournament, but you were hurt and couldn't play or couldn't practice, but you went to the golf tournament. Yeah, well, hey, you know, you went to golf tournament, Junior Seau's golf tournament. Golf. You didn't golf in the golf tournament. Remember, you were on the 18th green or something, and you would putt for, be the extra putter and greet everybody and meet everybody. It's just stuff like that that they would exaggerate out of, completely out of, you know, just wouldn't give you a chance. I don't know. It was just a bad vibe that, like you say, every single quarterback that has ever been drafted and has a rough year his first year.
Did you know that I would struggle with the scrutiny, with the pressure? Did you ever see that rear its head in college, or were we just too successful that year, even when I misbehaved or my attitude may have been a bit elitist or entitled? You know, I could go out on the football field and back it up. Could you see the fall coming, though, and how I dealt with the scrutiny?
Well, I don't really think people say that, you know, another year you shouldn't have come out early. Well, another year in Pullman playing would have helped the football team. Yeah, that would have been great. It's such an unusual situation that anybody goes into. I just think it fell down. They dropped the ball with their guidance, you know, because, and there was times when you and I didn't agree. I mean, a lot of times you and I right. didn't agree on things and even plays and practice and stuff. And we'd yell at each other and find a way to, you know, get through it. It was just, it was like they were trying to save their neck and not save your neck. They were extending you out at, you know, the chopping block kind of, and the, it's a little bit like that in the NFL, I think. Coaches maybe don't coach like they should because they're afraid of losing their job. Guys are firing guys so quick, you know. It's just true. It just was something that just didn't think would ever happen, but it did, and it was tough for you to go through.
Yeah, I mean,
really tough.
Yeah, it's life. It's in the finest of microscopes through that process. I swear to God, you and I could spend the next 2 hours on this show just talking about all of our experiences and everything like that. And we may we may just do that down the line if we do any more bonus episodes. But Coach Mike Price, thank you so much for taking the time. Tell your lovely wife Joyce, thank you so much for taking the time as well.